There's six of them, but the boundaries have changed. And like I said, we have about the same number of patrol officers in each district. And what we did that, why we did that, because we evened out our calls for service and we set our boundaries based off how we, based off the calls for service. So every zone now works, or a district, I still have to get used to it myself, but every district works off about 115 to 118,000 calls for service per year. And we believe that this will provide us with some relief, but what we want to have the ability to do is we want to have the ability to do more patrolling, more being deep inside of our communities, inside of our neighborhoods, to be able to make those connections. And what we've done will help us do that better. But adding to our patrol force and our manpower will help us to be able to succeed even much further. The city of Jacksonville is growing, and it's growing at a tremendous rate. I think people, I used to call Jacksonville the best kept secret in the Southeast, well, or in America, but it's not a secret anymore. Jacksonville is a beautiful place, and people see it, and people like the living that they're afforded here, and they're moving here by the thousands. So with that, we find ourselves in a difficult situation, and we have some numbers that I'm going to allow Director Key to share with you so that you can kind of get a clearer understanding about where we are and where we need to go. And what we've done over the years is we've kept single patrol vehicles where an officer is assigned to a location, and we've been able to cover more area by not putting two officers in a car. We put an officer in a car here, an officer in a car there, and they meet. If the call is not a dangerous call, they go on their own and deal with those situations on their own. So we'd like to be able to build upon that manpower, build upon that police force. I've asked the mayor and the city council for 40 more next year, and thankfully they've obliged us and given us that. And we're looking to build on that every year as we're allowed to do. And with that, I'll give it to Director Key. Director?
All right, good afternoon. Got a whole lot of numbers to share, so hopefully you all had coffee. Just to start off with the resolution 2022-1, I can say on behalf of the sheriff, we agree with that 2.73 per capita for sworn deputies. That is a good number. That would get us to where we need to be. We have traditionally been low. I think we're at 1.8, 1.9 per thousand now, and I think the city is growing probably, 17 to 18,000 people per year, and it's only going to get bigger. Florida continues to be a very attractive moving spot for families from all over. So with that, we have some good challenges, and I can tell you with respect to the police positions, we are hiring and filling up classes. Each class that we hold holds 40 recruits. We don't typically get 40 exactly, but we do get in the 30s. You know, 34, 35. Unfortunately, it is very competitive. It is very hard. We are very selective. Unlike most employers, we follow up with a polygraph as far as your questionnaire. So you may say that you don't do illegal drugs, and you may pass a test, but when we hook you up to a polygraph, if there's deception, we won't hire you. And as you can imagine, the challenges throughout the country where a lot of stuff is legal, that's not legal in Florida, it's not legal according to federal law, that can create a challenge. But despite all that, we are still filling up academy classes. There are still a lot of good quality individuals who want to be police officers and work for this agency. And that's very encouraging. This last class that started in July, we actually had 8 returning officers who had left. Maybe they pursued other careers. They didn't leave under investigation, but they left to pursue a private career, or maybe they moved to try somewhere else, and they came back because they realized it was actually better at JSO than in some other state. So those are encouraging. Right now, we are scheduled to have 5 academy classes this fiscal year starting in October, and so each of those classes could potentially hold 40. Which gets us to 200 hires in 1 year. That's a pretty high goal. We typically hire around 100 per year. Our attrition, if you look at the last 4 years, the average is about 5 officers per month. 2022 was pretty high. For some reason, it was almost 6 officers per month average. But this year, we're sitting at 2.73 officers per month. So they seem to be happy and not leaving. Some of that is just the timing of the drop plan when people were hired. We don't think there's anything specific to look at or a reason for that. So you can factor in about 60 retirements per year from our officers. So that then puts us at 140 is what we would pretty much max out at. Adding more than 5 classes per year could be done, but it would require some more transfers and additional instructors at the firing range. There's only so much we can do with the high liability, with the driving and the firearms. It's pretty regimented. It's a pretty full schedule, but it is possible. So I say all that to say that 140 officers per year for the next 8 years or however long is possible. So I know the commission had recommended 148, so we're close to that. It just depends on what the retirements look like. Can we keep up with the attrition? This last budget, which is still being approved, we added 80, 40 of which were a COPS grant that we're still waiting to see if we are awarded that grant. So that'll cover the cost of half of those. But we are scheduled to grow, not by 140, but at least 80 is a start. And I think that's what's in this coming budget. And whether that could be changed or not, I think we're probably too late for that. But going forward, that's certainly a possibility. So in a nutshell, we agree. We agree with the findings. We agree that we do need to grow. Starting salaries are certainly going to be an issue, and that is not something that the sheriff has control over. That is something between the FOP and the city to negotiate. We are actually in the last year of our contract now, starting in October. Those officers will see a 4.25 salary increase, which will help. The bad news is it still puts us behind some of our neighboring jurisdictions. You can actually, usually JSO was the big elephant in the room who nobody could compete with, but nowadays for example, Florida Highway Patrol starts at 50,000. We start at 47,916. So actually FHP for the first time in, I think forever, they actually started higher than us. After the step raises, we do surpass that, but the starting salary is unfortunate what a lot of applicants look at. Nassau County is 51,000, St. John's is 52,000, Orange County is 52, Pinellas is 50, Tampa Police Department is 65,000, Orlando is 52, Fort Lauderdale is 67, Broward is 53, Boca Raton, which is kind of an outlier, is 77, and Miami-Dade is 56,000. So it depends on where these recruits are coming from, whether or not they want to stick into Northeast Florida or not. I mean, we do get some out-of-state applicants who do transplant a family here, which is encouraging. But that is certainly the challenge that we're up against, and starting those negotiations earlier rather than later. We'd rather that start hopefully, this winter, as opposed to waiting until the contract is over and then starting fresh. But it's challenging because it's not up to us. That has to be between the FOP and the city. So we'll monitor that closely. As far as vacancies go, police vacancies right now, we have 55 vacancies, which is typical. We're about to start a class October, I think it's 23rd. Yeah, October 23rd. So we'll hire probably 35 in that class. I'm not sure what number we're on yet, but so right away you're going down to 20. I can't hire more than my vacancies allow, which is challenging. So there's a cap on the number of officers we can hire. So there are always going to be vacancies in order to fill that next class. So, and it's typically in the 50s. And like I said, five classes a year. So we're keeping up with attrition and then adding on top of that. And we're just dealing with police questions, right? We're not going into dispatchers or corrections because that's a whole nother thing to unpack. So we'll make it simple. Okay, good deal. Then I have all good news then with police. The other jobs are much more challenging. But as far as what it costs to hire a police officer, right now, based on the raises that they're getting per the contract, and this is everything. This is health, pension, vehicle, the tuition we would pay FSCJ, the training uniform. Each officer is $111,807. $111,807 is the cost per officer that's 12 months of pay. So 200 officers would cost about $22.3 million. So that is pretty much all the numbers I wanted to throw at you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, I'm going to go around. So we'll start off. Ms. Bama, you have any questions?
What do you think we need to do to be able to attract more officers to Jacksonville outside of obviously raising the starting salary? You say it's difficult to get people to come in. So
can be, yeah.
What are we missing?
It's maybe a different benefit package. We do hear from people. I know FRS is back in the works now. FRS just got better for state employees. It's better funded, especially for the high risk portion of police officers. Going from a 401 to an FRS would probably help in recruiting as well. But again, that's something that's out of our control. That's got to be negotiated. But I mean, salaries are a big one. That's sort of that. I mean, I feel like I'm talking about. I feel old when I talk about that. When I complain about younger generations, but pretty much it's, you know, a 401 is very portable, and FRS is portable to an extent. But it's also, you know, some people prefer a pension. So that, I think that's a big one. We're spending money now on digital recruiting, which is something new. We realize that most of our demographic that we're targeting are on their phones or looking at YouTube. They're on those platforms. So we are spending money, and we've hired a lot of multimedia specialists to enhance the videos we put out and some of the marketing. So we are doing that, and we're getting pretty good feedback from some of the applicants.
No. One of the other things I wanted to ask is there anything in the works to bring on more of the mental health counselors or ride? I don't know what you call them, but the ones that ride along for mental health crises and things of that nature.
And I'm not an expert on this, but the co-responder program is a partnership with MHRC.
Yes.
So those are actually MHRC employees. They're not JSO employees. So we're all for getting as many of those as we can. I think there's one in every zone right now.
Yeah.
But we'd like to increase the coverage so there's more hours, so it's 24/7. But that would require MHRC probably to have more funding and to that demand with us. But we're certainly ready to expand it if we could.
Is that something that the sheriff's office would consider bringing into their budget?
If it was funded,
obviously
we couldn't. We wouldn't want to. I mean, we're to the bone right now as it is. There's not a lot of, I mean, most of our budget is going to pensions and salaries. It's not going to buying helicopters and uniforms and guns. It's pretty much already set aside for those costs. So,
well, I know Mayor Deegan said last night it doesn't work to do things on the cheap. So I think she's probably open to some of that, but it's brand new. So
sure, and it is challenging too. It's hard to find a clinician who wants to work in a police car. I mean, it's way easier to have appointments come into your office than to be out there on the front line.
Yeah, right. And I think the what he was saying about MHRC, so the hours of operation are a little bit more difficult for them. I mean, we're a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week operation, holidays, it doesn't matter, we're always there. So getting those clinicians and then getting them to be able to work the hours that we can work are the challenges. I think Well, what we're using now is good. We like to increase it. but I can tell you that, example, if we get a call of a mentally ill individual where there is violence, we sometimes get it right away. Let's say the first person that comes to my door, I'm going to shoot him or I'm going to kill him. We won't introduce that person to something like that because it's too dangerous. So we've had a lot of good success, but yes, we are all for expanding it, but it's just up to MHRC to help to be able to get those people on board to hire for us.
But what about training some of the officers to do mental health stuff? Is that even something that's...
They are critical incident training. They have that kind of training, but quite frankly, asking a police officer to go be a mental health professional is not good for us. Okay. We'll do what we can do as best we can while we're there, but it's too difficult of a job for them to try to do effectively. We can probably do it short term or for smaller incidents, but when it comes to major issues, then we need professionals to be able to do that.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, fair enough. Yep. Yeah. Thank you.
Got a question. So you said there's 55 vacancies, and you can only fill how many vacancies you have?
Right. We can't go above the cap. So I couldn't put on two classes of 60 if I can't pay the other 10.
So unless they change that, you'll never have a higher number per thousand, right?
Well, whenever we add positions in the budget, like this year, we're going to add 80. I'll have those. Those will fall into the vacancy category, so I can hire them.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So a question for you, excuse me if I'm going to ask anyway. So what's the criteria? Is it still high school, or is it now college for being a police officer?
I printed it out because it's college, but also there are ways to. I can find it here for you.
I have a copy of that.
Here it is.
Military status, please.
It's there's a bunch of different ways to do it. You have to be 21, be an American citizen, possess a valid driver's license, 4 years continuous active military, 4 years full-time law enforcement, or 4 years service in the military reserves or an associate's degree, 60 hours, 60 semesters, 90 quarter hours, two years of full-time law enforcement and an associate's degree, 5 years continuous full-time employment and an associate's degree, 4 years currently employed as a civilian full-time with the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office and an associate's degree, or a 4 years currently employed as a Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, correctional officer, community service officer, certified bailiff, or judicial officer, or 2 years as a – it's a combination of an associate degree, workers, work experience, or a four-year degree, basically.
Gotcha. Okay, so – I'm asking that question because we have a HBCU school here, and we've talked among ourselves about having more of people of color become police officers. A lot of time it helps when you're going out in the community, someone that looks like you. Sometimes it's better. So my question to you all: are you guys go like? Because I know you guys have like a station or something at EWU.
Yes, we have a 3+1 program with EWU where students can finish it and really be hired that senior year.
Okay.
So it's 3 years, and then we accelerate you into the academy, and where there's contact with the recruiter and all that, and we've had a few recruits from that program. So that is a program that we've had now for, I think, 2 or 3 years.
Okay. And then my other question is, because I'm a military reservist as well, so a good other place to definitely to recruit based on, you know, what you're telling me now is definitely go, you know, looking at the reserve, because we have, you know, MPs and all that, and that would be a good place to recruit as well. Some, you know, people that already have some standards about themselves, you know,
right.
Values, and of course,
absolutely. I sign off on all the travel requests. We go to all the forts within driving distance. We're always Parris Island, Fort Bragg, all the different ones that are within the Southeast. We're constantly visiting and going to job fairs and that sort of thing. So that's certainly a demographic we're after.
Okay, and you know the at the wing, the Florida, the fighter wing, the 125th fighter wing, we have, you know, many youth that joined and have been in for years. That's another place to come as well, or get with a recruiter, because we have, you know, young people that actually join for college. So that would be another recruiting that's to look at as well, 125th fighter wing. And we have our recruiters different places, off Beach Boulevard, different places. That's another place I would think that you guys could look into as well. But you guys, you guys are doing, I guess, the best that you can with what you have. Hopefully in the future, continue to get more funding and everything. So.
We can get you at the better chair over there, too.
No, I'm fine. But when it comes to hiring, this is a great place. So we do very well with hiring people here, even though they don't make the most money in the state. I mean, we're pretty low on the list. And when it comes down to it, we have, you know, a pretty good, you know, since losing the pension, we have a pretty good retirement plan. But I think as long as, you know, we're going to the right places, we're knocking on the right doors, we're recruiting just about everywhere you can imagine. That's another place I hadn't heard, but that's a good one. But the salaries are going to eventually be a hindrance. It is what it is. And when you have Orange and Tampa and Hillsboro and all those places and you find yourself beneath them, that could ultimately create a problem because they'll start leaving, trying to go to places where they're paid more. And that's not me whining. I'm not complaining at all. I'm just looking at the facts when it comes to employment. But we are going to work very hard. We have a great agency, a very professional agency. I think the best, one of the best in the country, but I'm prejudiced, of course. And we do a really good job. But eventually that's going to be some sort of hindrance for us. But I think as long as we continue to focus on keeping this place a great place to work and taking care of our employees, we can make sure we handle that for the time being.
Like I said, those are different places to go to, and I just want to, you know, look, it's good to have diversity, you know, when you come out, you Absolutely. Know, sometimes more receptive, you know.
And also, let me when it comes to the diversity, you'll have 100 applicants, for example, just a number. And if it matches the population, which a lot of times it does, you have 62 of them that are white males, or white males and white females, and maybe 25 that are black, and then Asians, and so on, as the population goes. You got to remember, when you look at the process is extremely difficult. So we'll lose because it's long, right? You can't say that you don't use drugs and then go to a polygraph or take a drug test and we find out that you are, and expect you're going to get hired. The process is going to wash you out, or you have bad credit, or you're not in good physical condition to be able to do the things that are necessary. So over time, you start losing people, and when you lose people, that number kind of stays around the same. The percentages stay around the same, but the numbers are smaller. So that's where you find yourself, because we do a really good job of recruit. We recruit EWU. I mean that Dr. Okafor is someone I used to talk to a lot when I was a zone commander out there. And, but you got to, when you look at the process, you lose people because of the process itself, which then decreases your numbers all the way around.
Right. I'll just want to encourage, diversity, you know, good candidates, of course, any candidates, good candidates, all of them should be good candidates, but more diversity.
No, I just wanted you to know how to process the process. That's all.
Gotcha. All right, Daniel.
Sorry. My questions are going to mainly focus on recruitment and then a procurement question. But on the recruitment part, you said a lot of great things that I was really interested in. I was thinking of different ways that the agency can kind of look at different spaces that they haven't looked at before. I was curious, has the agency in the past or ever thought of in the future of possibly working with the school board to have some type of magnet program for interested students that are in high school that may be interested in law enforcement, so that way it kind of creates a pipeline?
I think there is a magnet at one of the high schools. We have an explorer program that focuses on high school age kids, and that's a feeder into other jobs like CSOs and you know, because a lot of times they're not old enough to be police officers. You have to be 21, so we need you to get out of high school a few years and hopefully get education. But yeah, I believe there is already a magnet, and we do have recruiters that go to high schools as well, because there are some other jobs that a high school graduate can get, such as a dispatcher, a police emergency communications officer, a corrections officer, detention deputy, or even CSOs. So we are on the high schools as well.
Is that the same age frame for the I forgot the specific term, the community service officer?
That's 18 and up.
Okay.
That's under 21.
Could that be a conduit for you to kind of?
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the jobs where if you've got experience there, you can transfer over to patrol.
Okay. To the chair's question, do you guys regularly work with the city's Military Affairs Department or the state's Military Affairs Department to try to get veterans that may have an interest in serving in law enforcement to possibly join the agency?
Yes, we actually, we also have a military liaison that goes, I actually went and met with that military group, the big group, and there's some things coming forward to work with those and do a better job of getting our military also. My son's just out of the military, he's getting ready to join. So.
Yeah, and I have a lot of members in my family that are military as well, so I was just curious to see how the, a lot of times when you're talking about different agencies, particularly when it's city, state, federal, you get the alphabet soups and sometimes it doesn't always necessarily work together, so I was curious to see what coordination happens on that level. This may be more directed at the sheriff. I know, obviously, the federal government, DOJ, has a COPS program that helps municipalities across the country fund new officers. Has the Sheriff's Association, or if the state has it, correct me if I'm wrong, tried to advocate for the legislature to create a similar type program on the state level to help counties like ours?
Not that I've heard of. I haven't. So I've been a member since November.
No. So not that I've heard of. That'd be a good question to ask.
I only ask because I know for the last 3-4 years, legislature and the governor, they've kind of focused on the bonuses as an incentive to kind of help. But I was curious to see if they've ever thought about it in the same kind of COPS grant type format on the state level.
I don't know that they have on the state level, but that might be something good to bring up. It's actually really good to bring up. So next, at the winter conference, I'll probably bring something like that up and talk to the FSA about that. Right now, we're waiting for the possibility of another grant anyway from the federal government that'll give us 40 more officers for years. So we're waiting to hear from them also.
Okay. Do you guys work when you're doing the COPS grant or any grants that may be available at the state level? Is that something the agency does independently, or do you guys work with the city's grant office as well, so there may be ways for you to have some synchronicity?
So we have our own grant writer, so we do that independently.
Okay. And then can you talk about when you are formulating a potential budget proposal, how do you guys kind of think about potential positions you want to fund via grant or stuff that may be funded via the general?
We'll let our chief of budget come and talk.
And he's come to speak to us before, so it's good to see you again.
Good to see you guys again. I'll give them a break for a second here. So as far as our, you know, our budget process, you know, a good portion of it's, you know, zero-based budgeting where we start from fresh every single year. So all of our existing positions are budgeted as if they're going to be staffed, and then the city backs off a piece for the lapse. And then in the upcoming year, you know, it's kind of broken down, you know, adding positions, it's two different buckets. You know, we look at the enhancement. And this year, you know, our goal was to add 80 police officers kind of coming this year. Because of the opportunity for the COPS grant was out there, we took a look at the documentation, the award criteria, and we felt like we had a pretty strong case to write that grant and apply for it. So in that case, we backed off of our general fund request and an enhancement to the mayor and just put 40 there, and then we moved 40 over kind of into the COPS grant. Obviously, we work with the mayor's office on that, let them know that, you know, should we be awarded this grant? And we should find out at some point later this month that they'll need to set aside some money to pay for the, you know, the vehicles and the radios and equipment and stuff like that.
You delved right into my next question. So when you were talking about the $111,807 per officer for the first year cost, what's the cost of that after the first year?
I don't have that number handy. It definitely goes down from that. That number is kind of front-loaded because you're talking about – hold on, I can't read my own spreadsheet here. you know, you're looking at the actual the purchase price of the car, the purchase price of the radio, the purchase price of the computers and some of the equipment. So a lot of that's front-loaded in year one, so the cost does go down in year two. It's also – you know, the city budgets internal services a certain way. So while the cost in year one may be $111,000 per officer, that's not what you'll see in our budget. Some of it will be spread among fleet or the radio shop.
So I asked that question because I know in our resolution, when we were kind of talking about the number of officers per capita and the initial cost of what that would happen, because I think we talked about potentially using the added value of the ad valorem taxes to kind of do it. I just wanted to make sure that thinking about it, we kind of thought about it the right way in terms of how you guys look at costs on a year-to-year basis.
Yes.
Okay. For the polygraph, I thought that was really interesting. In terms of questions that get asked. Is there a psychological profile that goes along with that?
Yes, of course. Yeah, there's a psychological, but a psychologist as well.
So what's a model officer or recruit that you guys are looking for?
Somebody that's, even-tempered, smart. Can think on their feet and has a history of making good decisions. We're all individuals. Everyone's a little different. But you know, somebody that can pass all of those. I mean, we do eliminate people because of the psychological. That does happen. And it's the same doctor that we use for our fit for duties. Anytime we have an officer involved incident, he would be the one to clear him. So this is a doctor that's had years of experience with this, especially with this type of field, and we typically trust his judgment.
I have two questions left. As far as I know, there's no state or national type database where you can kind of look at past offenses or misconduct that an officer may have had when they go from agency to agency. That part of the questionnaire or the polygraph when you guys are going through the review process?
We have an extensive background check into each of these applicants. Everyone, you know, we talk to neighbors, we talk to former employers. If it's a previous law enforcement officer, we would check the concise. We would check the internal complaint log for that particular agency, and we would figure out if there was something, a foul. Anytime, especially in Florida, every state's different, but in Florida, if you resign under investigation, that is a mark on your certificate. So we would know if someone resigned because they were going to get fired or they were under investigation in Florida. Or some states, they would revoke their certificate. So it's not a concern of mine that we're going to hire a bad apple. We typically do pretty good vetting. The problem officers that we have probably just we're born that way and we didn't get it on the front end, but luckily it's very few.
That makes me feel better. All right, last question. It's a procurement question. I know you guys signed the new contract with, I believe it's NAFCARE. I know that's exempt from the procurement code, so you guys get to sign it. I'm in procurement, so I was just curious about the contract itself. Does it kind of have built-in performance measures, the way that you kind of review it so you determine when you decide you want to renew or not? And do you guys have an assigned contract manager that's responsible for going back and forth with the vendor on any issues? So you can kind of prevent what happened with the last vendor.
Absolutely, yes. We do have a dedicated contract manager that just started, when you say?
3 days ago.
3 days ago.
Yeah.
Oh, congrats to them.
So, and as far as the performance measures, there's actually quite a few in the contract, and there's quite a few penalties for not meeting those measures, so that'll be something this person is responsible for monitoring. But, yeah, the contract provides us with a lot of protections. It was drafted by Lasiki Hodges, kind of up in OGC, so we feel very comfortable with the contract that we have with NAFCARE moving forward.
And it's different from the way that the old contract was drafted for the previous vendor, to kind of learn from some of the things that you address at your press conference, I believe.
Yeah, the framework of the contract is still mostly the same, because a lot of it is the kind of the deliverables, the scope of services the vendor is supposed to provide. That hasn't changed. But yes, we definitely honed in on the kind of the requirements of the vendor and the oversight and some of the penalties.
And quite frankly, we have a new auditor, because the one that was there previously was having some issues. So we made a lot of changes that were necessary to make sure that things are being done. Things are being done the right way. So we're going to make sure that happens.
And was it on an ACS or was it a whole new contract?
ACS.
Oh, sorry. Did you piggyback on an existing contract that another municipality had, or is it a whole new contract that was?
No, this is a whole new contract.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
I just have one question. You're talking about recruiting and your standards, and I understand reasons for standards. Is there any provision made for somebody that, as a teenager, made a mistake and kind of got over that, and they've kind of resurrected their life to and they still like to be in law enforcement. Is there any kind of a program where you, you know, I said you do all background checks and stuff, but there's some, is there a program that would let them, would actually look at them just in regard to some of the things they've done in their past that are now moved away from?
Well, of course, it would depend on what the crime was. We can't have convicted felons. Legally, you can't have a convicted felon be a police officer. But it depends on, you know, how young they were, what the crime was. I mean, we do have, I mean, there obviously things come out in the interview, and then we have to figure out, you know, what the risk is. I mean, there are, it's not, you know, everyone's entitled to make a few mistakes, that's for sure. But it just depends on the circumstance.
I was overhearing that when y'all are hiring somebody, that their credit score is a factor in that. Now, how does that play? Because, like, for example, I'm 23, so my biggest issue would be the lack of history. I mean, how does that? Is it like, you know, three strikes and you're out, or how does
no,
that
work? We've actually adjusted that a little bit. It's actually there is no set score. It just depends on, you know, do you have a lot of money in collections? You know, I have a concern about if you owe, you know, $100,000 in credit card debt, do I want you pulling a drug dealer over and counting his cash? You know, I mean, we have body cameras, we have, you know, checks and balances, but we've definitely cut it back a little bit. I mean, COVID was tough. People may have been out of work. Maybe they had a repo or something that they didn't expect or couldn't help. We'll overlook some of that stuff. It just depends on the dollar amounts. Nothing extreme. We want somebody that has a, you know, obviously it would take years to get the kind of problems that we're usually disqualifying people for. It's not just a mistake or an accident.
Yeah. And then when JSO purchases their assets, is it just all cash or is that like more in a payment?
We don't pay their debts.
Oh, okay, yeah. So it's no, assets no. are paid in cash, I'm assuming?
No, they would. I mean, if someone had a high amount, we would ask them to.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a completely different question. when it comes to, like, your equipment, you know, like your cars.
We cover all that.
Okay, so it all is paid
in cash. Yeah, nobody, you don't. I mean, I think everything I'm wearing except for my undershirt and underwear and socks the sheriff bought.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
No, you're talking about large expenditures?
Correct. Like, let's say, you know, y'all get 100 new police cars. Is that, okay, we're going to pay Nimnik Chevrolet this much a month, or is it like, hey, we're paying all this cash?
It really depends upon the items. So, for example, cars, that's actually handled by City Fleet. So City Fleet would outlay the cash. There will be an amount placed in our budget to kind of pay back Fleet to replace that vehicle 5 years down the road. But, yeah, the city actually outlays all the cash for any of our purchases. So we go through city procurement, city accounting. We use all their services.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah. I actually asked what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Yeah. So we let me just say this: we believe in giving people second chances, but as a sheriff, I have to always take into account not seeing the signs. Or something that may be problematic in the future, because if there's a problem that comes up with that person, you can bet people are going to start looking. So you almost have to have a very strong hope that your background investigations are doing well. And I think we assign background investigators to every applicant, in hope that, you know, we are making the right decision. I believe that we are. I believe the process is good. But sometimes, you know, you might have someone that gets through that. But I fully believe in second chances. If you use psychedelic drugs, if you use cocaine, LSD, and those things, it's like 10 or 15. It's a long wait. I mean, you can't come and do that. Marijuana is a more shorter period of time because now it's becoming more and more legal across the country. But, yeah, so we fully believe in second chances. We fully believe in taking things on a case-by-case basis. But we have to be extremely, extremely careful because you guys are not going to accept me hiring someone that probably shouldn't be working here. So it's we've got to be very careful.
Okay. One question.
Yeah, one quick follow-up. So you named all the different criteria with colleges and all. Have you ever considered folks that go to, like, four-year vocational schools, working at some type of a craft for X amount of years, and then decide they want to be a policeman
yeah, so
to
what,
utilize that?
So we also utilize, you know, years of service or years of that you've worked on a job. And if you worked 5 or 7 years on a job continuously, then really, to be honest with you, when I first got here, I didn't have a college degree in 1991 when I first started. You know, and that doesn't dictate who you are as a person and how hard you're going to work or what kind of professional you're going to be. And quite frankly, I believe that a lot of people that have been in the workforce for a certain amount of time have a lot of experience than a kid who, now this is not knocking anyone who goes to college and gets a job. I'm not doing that. But that left their parents' house and went to college and then came to get a job and entered the workforce. Usually people that are working, that have that consistent experience are very dependable, especially if they're not problem people in their current jobs. So, yeah, all that stuff, we take all that into account.
Okay, so I'm going to change it a little bit. Prevention, what do you guys have going on as far as prevention programs for youth? Because we need it.
We have an entire community engagement and crime prevention section. Quite frankly, I wasn't prepared to come and address that, or else I would have brought that with me. But there's so much that goes on. There's so many things that go on within the sheriff's office that many don't know, and quite frankly, that's a lot of that's our fault. So that's why we've created a much more robust public information unit, because there's no reason that you shouldn't know about these things. But a big one that we have, especially when it comes to dealing with violent crime, I started, I'm going to toot my own horn just a little bit, but I started it because I saw a need to try to intervene in the lives of young men that were involved in this gang violence and this group violence. And these rappers, which is crazy to me, they call it drill rap, where we know they're involved in violence. We know they're involved in violent crime, so we hire an outreach manager, and we go to their houses, and we still go to their houses. As a matter of fact, they did it today. And we pick 5 or 6 guys that we know are at risk of either being shot or shooting someone or losing their lives. And we go visit them and we offer them a way out. And the message is quite simply this, and I'm a very plain talker when I talk, so it's this. We want to keep you safe. We want to keep you alive. We want to keep you out of prison. But if you decide that you don't want to take this offer, what you're telling me is that you want to continue in the path that you're going, and we're going to do everything we can to stop you. Because that's a police officer's job. Not only to try to prevent crime, but to do something with the individuals that decide they want to do things to hurt members of our community. And I did that from 2016 to 2019, and we visited 450 houses. And I say that because 450 may not seem like a lot over the years, but I'm talking individual knocks at the door. I'm talking going to individual houses of different young men every week in this city. And now they are up to over 900. They are up to over 900 visits of young men. And I say young men, not to leave girls out, but it's just not the same as guys. You know, we just act completely different. And that's usually who we're having issues with. And we do that today to this very day, and we're going to continue to do it. But what's unique about that is that we've built a coalition of outreach and support providers throughout the city, whether it be pastors, whether it be mental health folks at trauma, to deal in trauma, mental health work, and we take them with us. And we go to those doors and we talk to those young men about trying to get out of that lifestyle. And we've saved some lives and we lost some. But I know we're targeting the right groups. We have what we call shooting review meetings every Thursday to go over every shooting that takes place in Jacksonville. And if your name shows up, if Charles Barr shows up at being at a shooting 1 week, and then the earlier, a month ago, we saw Charles Barr at another shooting, and maybe a day before that, Charles was involved or somewhere where something else bad happened, we know Charles might be in trouble. So we're going to go talk to Charles and say, listen, we know there's something going on, and eventually you're going to find yourself behind bars. You're going to find yourself dead. We want to save your life. That's our biggest prevention and intervention technique.
What's that called?
It's called our violence reduction strategy. And then Garland Scott is our outreach and support manager. I hired him. He's from New York City. Originally, he's been here for like 35 years. And he was a gang member in New York, lost a friend to gang violence, had to move from there, came to Jacksonville, got called into the ministry. He's been a pastor for many years. And, you know, when I met him, he was a unique guy because he wasn't afraid to partner with the police. You know, this is there's this new thing in society where, you know, people are being discouraged from partnering with the police, and that's the craziest thing in the world to me, because we're just members of a community that grow up here and raise kids here and live here, and just normal people that want to do a job and make everyone do the best that we can to make people safe. But he was willing to do that, and he did it for free. And he did it for 6 months for free. And I said, man, we got to hire this guy because he's very valuable. So he's working here now, and that's a big one. But there are so many different things that we do out of police athletic league. We're the biggest contributor to that because it's not run. It's not a sheriff's office owned foundation. The police athletic league is national, but we're the biggest contributor to the police athletic league. We provide manpower, and just there's so many different things. And we'll get you some of the list when we come back.
So my last thing I want to say, and I've said it before, because we want to establish a good relationship with the police officers. And a lot of times, like you said, a lot of times they don't want to work with you, and you see you all as the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I'm not so sure you're originally from Jacksonville, but I've been born and raised in Jacksonville. I remember as a youth, as actually elementary school, of Officer Friendly. And I'm not sure if you guys do that or not, but I think it would be good to, you know, start the kids off early. Of course, they need it, you know, elementary school, middle school, and high school, but definitely early, letting them know that you guys are not the foe, that you can be also friendly or someone that you can look up to. I mean, because I remember when I was little in elementary school, they would come, you know, they would come out and they'll spend 30 minutes, maybe an hour with us. But it created a relationship, so I never looked at you all as, you know, horrific.
Right.
And I think that still needs to be done today, you know, building, and I know you guys are going to work on building a relationship, but I think, you know, start off of elementary school, definitely middle school and high school, because sometimes in high school, y'all is almost too late sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But start early, you know, developing a relationship, you know, with the schools, you know, going and, you know, definitely inner city schools, but it's needed.
So first of all, let me say this. Our schools are run by a school board police department. So we don't.
That's so separate now.
So we're completely separate, right? We don't. We give them the professional courtesy of doing the school stuff, and that was our way in. But we're fighting a whole different beast these days, and that beast is social media. Social media, and I can't say enough about it, and none of it's good, because in 1991 there was no social media, and I'm noticing the relationship deteriorate to a point in 2023 that I can't really understand why we're going forward, but we're going backwards at the same time. Well, social media has a way of putting information out that gets around the world in nanoseconds, and there's no context to it. There's no real information connected to it, and even our mainstream media now has changed drastically. And if you show someone enough, if I show enough pastors in Jacksonville that have molested kids, they're going to believe pastors are molesters, if that's the goal. And unfortunately, we're fighting against that, and it's very hard to defeat it, but we're not going to stop. We're going to continue to do the things that we do to work very hard to do our part to show that we are, and I can't say this enough, we are members of this community. There's a reason why I came and shook everybody's hand, because I want people to feel that I'm just a regular guy. I have 3 kids here. I have 4 grandkids here. I'm just a regular guy who does a job 24 hours a day, 7 days a week that loves this community, right? So we're fighting. If you can make your police department look like a foe through social media, and you want to convince people that it's all bad, that's what happens. And we're fighting that tide because it's not that bad. As a matter of fact, we had a awards ceremony this morning to talk about the wonderful things that police officers do in this community every single day that most people will never hear because no one's interested in telling good stories. So we're going to work real hard to do that, and we're going to continue to do that, which is why we built our public information unit the way that we did. But it's a tough one. It's a tough nut to crack, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I'd just like to see again more partnership, you know. I understand about the school thing, but more partnership, working together as a community, that's how we win. When you, you know, if you get, you know, if you have so much controversy and we get divided that way, you know, in order to get the real target, which is the bad guy, we have to learn to work together. And there should be a sense of trust as well.
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of a question and then maybe just a statement. I'm a part of the Sheriff's Watch.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just want to say, first of all, the Sheriff's Watch is a very important group to the community. But the problem is there are so many people within the community that don't know about it or don't get involved. Is there a way that you've ever thought about or a way to get more people involved, know more about it? Because a lot of the things that you have talked about, such as the different things that you do with crime prevention and all of that, a lot of that information comes to the Sheriff Watch people, and we find out all these various things. So is there some way that you think you'd be able to get more people in the communities involved so more information and good things that you do, or so the community understands more about the things that you are doing that are positive?
So we have social media accounts, and we have quite a few. And we talk about that stuff on social media. Unfortunately, some of those stories aren't sexy enough for our local news. And I'm just, those are just the facts. I do sheriff's walks, and I knock on every door, and I talk to people, and I give them pamphlets. I tell them about Sheriff's Watch and tell all your neighbors. Word of mouth is probably the best way other than social media. And if people want to come out and they want to learn, quite frankly, I believe some people are willingly ignorant, and they want to stay that way. And then some are not. So we share that information as often and as much as we can, and we're going to keep doing it. We have, you know, not as many followers on some of our social media sites as some of the more popular people do, but we're working really hard at it. And I recognize it. I hired a young man about 24 years old because, to be honest with you, I can text. That's about it. The rest of that stuff I'm not real good at. But I hired a young man who speaks, you know, the language of social media, and they're all really young in our public information unit because I recognize the need to be able to share information that way. So we're working really hard on it, and we're going to keep doing that.
Thank you.
One more question, and it's going to Danny. One more question, Danny. Last question. How do you feel about your diversity training? Do you think you have adequate diversity training?
Yeah. I think diversity training is really steeped in what we do every single day. From the day one you go into the police academy, you learn about diversity. You learn about cultural diversity. You learn so much, and we're always learning about everything, right? But I think a lot of times when you look around, you know, there are certain, this is not by any means a knock on what you asked, but you hear that culturally we don't understand how to operate in certain communities, right? But we actually do. It's just that I think people always look for a way to say, you guys need more training. You know, you guys need, and we always train. In-service training, we have that all the time because we have to keep our training standards up, and that's some of the training. And listen, I think it's important to do it. We're going to continue to do it, and it happens. It happens quite often.
Thank you.
I'll make this a fun question.
Thank you.
No, because I was laughing in my mind about something that I was going to ask him. That's why I was saying a fun question. I wasn't talking about anyone else. That was in shade. You really got me when you were talking about social media, and
yeah.
I was thinking about probably some of your other colleagues across the state. And when I think of like high profile sheriffs, Grady Judd is probably the one that probably pops in my head a lot. Partly in the way that he kind of promotes the office and how he kind of goes out to the community. But in terms of the brand of JSO and how you kind of use social media to your advantage, with this new unit that you've kind of created, the Public Information Unit, have you guys thought about the content that you want to kind of curate out there to talk about Sheriff's Watch or the other programs that you guys are doing so that way people are informed? Because it builds that ability for you to kind of communicate directly to the public without having to depend on news sources to put it out for you.
Yes. That's the answer. I mean, we've thought about all that. I mean, listen, that's why I hired young people that understand social media algorithms. They understand that stuff. And where I don't social media that much, I might put a little something on Instagram about my family and when we go do something, but that's about as far as I go. And Grady Judd is a whole different. He's in a whole different place, a whole different thing, and I'm not going to try to be him. Right. This is Jacksonville. I'm the Jacksonville Sheriff. So we're going to work to package information so that people will be able to see it. But I think, I hope you've seen me be in the public eye a lot more, being the front, the leader of this agency. And I think it's important to do that and share information. You know, there's a lot of things I could have basically said, nah, I don't need to talk about that. But I talk about it because I think it's important for people to know. This is JSO is Jacksonville's agency. And I'm Jacksonville's sheriff, so I want to share as much as I can through whether it be through the news media or our horses were out on the north side the other day. A friend of ours, a young friend of mine, Winston Seabrooks, took a picture of the horses being out there, and we thanked him for taking that picture of the horses being in the community. And we're utilizing things a lot differently, a lot more differently than previously done. And that's not to knock anyone. So I take, you know, whether it be, I started with Jim McMillan. Matter of fact, we took pictures together. It's kind of cool. I started with Jim McMillan and came to Glover and been here since through all of them. So you take a little bit of everything that they had to offer, plus what you know is new, and you learn from others, and you try to put that in and package it up so people can get it and understand it. And I think we've been doing a pretty good job so far. The only ones that won't believe it are people who don't want to believe it. And we're just going to continue to get better and improve.
No, I agree with that. I think that you've been much more out. And this is not a dog on your
I know it.
On your predecessors, but I think you've been much more out front, and I think the community does appreciate that. And if you can do those that town hall that you did at the Prime Osborne, I think that went a long way of kind of keeping people informed. I think if that's a regular thing, it may help you in that outreach.
Yeah. So we are planning to probably try to do something like that annually. If I do it more than annual, it's going to cost too much money. But do it about annually, and I think that gives us good, fresh things to inform the community about and move through that. So I believe in it. It's like the horrible thing that happened the other day. I'm an honest guy, and I want to tell people the truth. And the biggest thing that I wanted to do was get out as quick as possible and tell people what happened and why it happened. You know, not saying it's under investigation. If I say it's under investigation, it's because I can't say something or I don't know. But if I know, and I know why it happened, then I'll say it, because I believe it's good for people to know, and go on from there.
One more question. I have a statement.
Okay, your statement.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share with you, first off, I will admit I did not vote for you.
That's fine. Yes, ma'am.
In the interest of transparency here. But what I have seen of you so far has been impressive. I do appreciate your openness. You do seem to be sharing a lot more information. You on your campaign trail said that you would release body camera footage. You've done that. You do not seem to be backing down on some of those things. You are up in your face when need be. I was shocked that you used the N-word during your press conference. But I understand, I think I understand why you did it, because it was your way of really saying just how horrible, how horrific this particular incident was. And, you know, to just see what you have been doing so far, I am quite impressed. And I appreciate what you've done so far. And I hope that you do continue, and I think that you will. So then, thank you.
Thank you. Well, about that, the N-word. I think it was important for people to know exactly what he said. And it's one time I said it. I wasn't going to say it again, and it wasn't meant to shock anyone. But I wanted people to really understand what that man believed and what he said. And he said it a bunch of times. And eventually, I think everyone's going to see that. The FBI is going through it to make sure there's no other language in there that shouldn't be seen, but or that be utilized to try to empower other groups that may be out there or stuff, something like that. But, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, a lot of people probably didn't vote for me, but it doesn't matter. What matters to me is being honest, being truthful, and showing people that I actually love Jacksonville. I actually did this because I care about the city and I care about the people in the city. And maybe you'll vote for me next time. You know, we'll see.
All right.
Famous plug. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
But thank you.
Is there any questions? Okay. Well, again, thank you all for coming out. Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you, everyone. Again, that was a blessing. Thank you for honesty. Thank you for transparency. And you are doing a great job. I didn't vote for you either, but
I voted for you.
I was hoping somebody here did. Thank you.
But no, honestly, you've done a great job, you know, thus far. Keep going, and I definitely would like to get more resources on your preventive programs. I'm like you. I love the city. I was born and raised here. I love the youth. I see what's going on to the Afro American young men. Don't like it. Want to see, you know, something greater and better for them. So, any information that you can share with me, I would love to have it. And again, thank you all so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good night.
Okay. Can I move approval of the minutes?
Give me a chance to. God.
I'm trying to speed it up for you.
All right, well, really, yeah. 10,001 questions. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm assuming you guys saw the minutes of August the 3rd and had a chance to look over it. So make a motion to accept the minutes.
Motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
Thank you.
Or did you make a motion?
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
No, we got three.
Okay, yeah. We don't have public comment.
We didn't vote.
Oh, I apologize. Oh, all in favor?
No, wait. No, I have discussion.
Sorry.
On page 3, it says Commissioner Day said the commission will T. Yeah. And that's it.
Where you see that at?
The last page right above the meeting was adjourned.
Oh, yes.
And that's in the which set? The 14th or
right
the
before the meeting?
Oh, the T on the third page.
Yeah, it like the sentence didn't finish.
Right there. T, I see. That T, you see it?
Oh. Yes. How about if I delete that sentence?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so we can amend the motion now. Once it's hit.
Move to amend.
Thank you. All right. Auditor's report. Do you have
it? And was that both sets?
I just wanted to move fast on that. Okay.
Did I not provide you with the special committee, special meeting minutes? No, I guess
this is special meeting minutes right here.
Yeah, this is special
meeting minute.
This was on August 14th.
Okay.
I don't have the regular. Yeah, I don't have. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Okay. That's good.
All in favor of approving the special meeting minutes that has been amended?
Aye.
The motion has been passed. Thank you. There's no public comment and the auditor's report.
Ma'am, through the chair to the commission, council auditor's office released one report since the last true commission meeting. And that was the quarterly summary for the 9 months ended June 30, 2023, was released on August 15th, 2023. Give you some highlights of this report. This report included the city and independent agencies quarterly reports as of June 30th. Some highlights were for JEA's electric system. We noted that JEA will need to come back for budget amendment due to the use of reserve funds for future Vogtle debt payments. Also, the electric system fuel expenses are coming in below budget due to lower fuel costs. For the water and sewer system, we note the JEA will also need to come back for a budget amendment due to the use of reserve funds. Overall, all JEA systems are projected a balanced budget at year end. For JTA, The bus division is projecting a $5.3 million favorable variance, primarily due to net sales tax for operating, which includes the half-cent sales tax and the constitutional gas tax. We do note that the ferry division is projected to exceed budgetary authority, and if those projections hold true, JTA will need to come back for a budget amendment. In our report, we have a note that JTA needs to file legislation to amend their fiscal year 21-22 budget due to actual expenditures exceeding budgetary authority. We do note that we'll note that JTA has filed legislation, and it's Bill 2023-562 to amend their budget. For JPA, JPA is projecting $8.6 million overall favorable budget variance, mainly due to a favorable budget variance in operating revenues of $4.6 million, which is due to projected increases in cruise revenue, container revenue, and dry bulk revenue. Also contributed to the favorable budget variance is an additional $2 million in investment income because of higher yields on returns. JAA is projecting a $39.5 million overall favorable budget variance, primarily due to construction delays, so less has been contributed to capital outlay. For the city, the general fund quarterly summary shows an overall positive variance of $44.1 million. However, the true variance should be $40.6 million. This is due to the general fund loan revenue for solid waste, not showing a negative budget variance of $3.5 million due to the reduction in the loan amount as recommended in the fiscal 21-22 recapture report. So it actually should be $40.6 million positive variance. Based on this variance for general fund revenue, shows a positive variance of $22.2 million instead of $25.7 million. And the variant, that positive variance is due to ad valorem taxes, franchise fees, state shared revenue, and interest earnings were all projected to exceed budget. Variance for general fund expenditures shows an $18.4 million positive variance. This is primarily due to an overall positive variance for the sheriff's office of $9.7 million due to savings in personnel costs because of vacancies, and a positive variance in contractual services due to savings on security guard services and food services. The general fund loan repayment is showing a positive variance of $3.5 million due to the reduction in the solid waste loan. JFRD has positive variance of $1.6 million due to savings in leave, sellback, and internal service charges. Also, the library is showing a positive variance of $1.5 million, mainly due to savings in personnel costs as a result of vacancies. Some other items to note. The solid waste fund is showing a negative budget variance just under $1 million. However, the general fund loan repayment expense should show a positive variance of $3.5 million, which would increase the overall variance to a positive $2.5 million. Also to note, for the solid waste fund, ARP funds are currently covering the $10.4 million in increased costs due to recent rate changes for two garbage haulers. If not for the ARP funds covering the increase in hauler costs, the fund would be projecting a negative variance of $7.9 million for the fiscal year. For this quick highlights, if anybody has any questions.
I thought she was going to go some more. Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Yes, sir. You know, I always complain about JTA and their budget. So, is that going to be a separate piece of legislation that is adopted before the new FY budget is going to go into place, or is that going to be rolled in? I'm not sure what about the process.
This legislation, the 2023-562, will be attached to the budget legislation for fiscal year 21-22. So it'll be attached with that, showing the change. It won't have anything to do with this fiscal year budget.
Okay, that makes sense. For the caps on page 87 to talk about open positions, is it possible for us to also get this at the division level as opposed to just the department level?
Yeah, Well, this is what we get from the city, so I don't know what I have to ask.
Yeah, I think that gives a better picture. I've thought about that always, but I've never really asked, so I just thought
if I I will ask.
Questions?
Through the chair, I know that on the very first meeting that I attended, I wasn't a commissioner yet. It was reported JTA was over budget and so forth. And the question that I had at that point was how can they just go over budget without getting approval? And so I guess I still have that same question. I understand that we're wanting to get our records straight, but what procedures have we put in place to prevent this from occurring going forward?
Well, these are projections. Their actuals haven't exceeded budget. So they're projecting to exceed budget. We won't really know until after year end what the final amount will be. It could come immediately as soon as they do it, but as soon as they exceed budget, but they won't know how much money to really increase their budget by because they're still in the fiscal year. They might have to come back for separate legislation. But at the end of the year, they're just true up their budget because the ordinance code states that they can't spend the money without it being appropriated by city council.
Exactly, but they've already done that.
Not yet, and they're projecting to.
I'm reading this bill, 562, and it says the JTA determined that its fiscal year 21-22 operating expenditures exceeded budgetary authorization in several divisions as follows, and it lists them out.
Right, right.
That, to me, tells me it's already happened.
This was for fiscal year 21-22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're talking about when at 9:30, which is the end of the fiscal year, when we got their fourth quarter summary, that's when we stated they need to come for a budget amendment because we only get their financials on a quarterly basis. So at the third quarter, they were projecting, and we stated in the report on whatever divisions that were over, that if the projections hold true, they'll need to come back to city council. So throughout the fiscal year, like, for example, here in June, I don't remember exactly where the divisions, each divisions for JTA sat at June, but, you know, their actuals had not exceeded budget. They had not spent beyond budget, and I know it's semantics, but the actual amounts for their expenditures through 9 months had not exceeded budget. Between June and September, their actuals exceeded budget. So when they reported, that's when we said, okay, because when we reported here, now we know they're not going to spend any more money for fiscal year 21-22. This is how much they need to amend their budget by.
Okay, so you're telling me in a three-month period of time, JTA, they said that they weren't going to exceed their budget, but in a period of 3 months' time, they exceeded their budget by $3.8 million in the bus fund, over $829,000 in the connection fund, over $729,000 in the Skyway Fund, $259,000 in the Ferry Fund, and $1.4 million in the General Fund.
Yes.
In 3 months' time.
No, I said I wasn't sure what their projections had said, but they were projecting to go over. Their actuals as of 9:30 had not exceeded budget. Actuals being what they actually have spent had not exceeded budget. They were projecting to go over budget, but they didn't know by how much they have a projection, which it's Yes. So until we get the full amount, the actual amount that they go over budget at year end, once we have the full amount that they've gone over budget, then they can amend their budget. And for JTA especially, the only monies really that the city contributes from the general fund is for the CTC, the Community Transportation Coordinator, for the ADA. And that's only about a $1.4 million. That's the only money that comes out of the general fund. But the rest is basically the city is a conduit. Comes the half-cent sales tax comes through, and the local option gas tax just comes through the city. There is some splitting of the city of the local option gas tax between the city and JTA, but they get that money over. They get their money through that. Per the state law, because JTA is also a state agency, the city council has to appropriate their overall operations budget. So that's a long statement to say, as of June, their actuals had not exceeded budget, if I remember the quarterly summary correctly. I'm going by memory right now. Projection-wise, they probably stated on some of their divisions they were going to go over, and we noted that in our report. Once they go over, if the projections hold true, they need to come back to City Council. And it's after the fact, but we have a full amount of what their actual amount is for year end. So then they can just make one amendment to their instead of.
But this is over $6 million.
Across four divisions.
For JTA.
Mm-hmm. And it was due to half cent sales tax coming in higher than expected. It was also due to them selling some property in the general fund. That's why it was so large as well. So it was things that happened that weren't necessarily budgeted for. At the first of the year for the half cent sales tax, we all make a projection of how much we're going to receive based on the past, basically, of what's been received. We try to roll it forward. JTA comes up with a projection, the city budget office comes up with a projection, and then we try to see if the projections are reasonable. There was a lot more spending that year for whatever reason, so they got more of the half-cent sales tax revenue. So that caused the $3.8 million.
I guess I'm just flabbergasted that this agency can overspend by $6 million without coming to somebody first.
Well, yes. I mean,
that's unacceptable to me. That's way too much. I'm floored.
Can I help?
Please help me if I'm not understanding.
I'll ask a reasonable question. You have hit a nerve, because this is something that I've always been frustrated for the last at least 3 years, because it's been continuous. Partly it's because the way that they do their financials is separate from the city, unlike other agencies where the city would have much more of a view in terms of how they're spending on a month-to-month basis. But my question related to Commissioner Pryor, when they present their budget every year, goes through MBRC, city reviews it, decides, yeah, that's good, there's not. Obviously, I know the majority of their funds comes from state-related revenue. I get that. But the city council still gets to approve it. So is there any counseling? Is there any additional scrutiny that the Department of Finance Administration does to say, you know what, you guys have proposed a budget. Last 3 years, you've gone over the budget. Maybe your projections aren't right, and we need to add more cushion.
so that way you don't have to come back at the end of the year and ask for us to appropriate, technically, give you more budget authority because you overspent because your projections for expenditures were wrong. Does that happen?
Through the chair to Commissioner Henry. No, because they're an independent agency, and they are JTA is unique in that they have to have their budget to the city by June 1. The rest of the independent agencies so they start their budgeting process and projection process a whole lot earlier in the process than what the city does. So by the time it gets to us, the city, just puts it in the budget. They don't really, other than going to MBRC, the funds, our office looks at JTA.
I know that's
And they will that's why there's we make a lot of adjustments to JTA's budget based on that timeline of that because we have more information than what JTA had when they're projecting their budget and the reason they have to have it in by June 1 is they're working on the state.
No, I get it. I know the property price is in the same kind
of
unique place. I'm just saying, I know we don't do it,
right?
But is there anything stopping Weinstein or anyone within the city and finance to say, hey, maybe you should appropriate more, so that way we're not in this position again?
To my knowledge, I don't know of anything that would prohibit them other than JTA being an independent agency. System. They're not on the city system. They would have really the county finance would have no way of verifying JTA's numbers because they're not even on the same accounting system.
So, a question: do you think that we, as a true commission, should invite JTA in to try to get an understanding as to what their processes are and perhaps direct them or discuss with them an opportunity that they could change something that they're doing to maybe balance this budget a little bit more. Maybe we need to talk directly to them to get more information of their budgeting process, which could help us maybe help them to make some changes. An opportunity.
Sounds good to me. Jeff, can we perhaps get a representative to come in the future?
It's January at this point. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, January. Yeah, that's the future. In January, perhaps get a representative to come out, request. We can answer some of those questions. Mm. From accounting division. Yes, sir.
Just a comment on, I know the amount is tremendous, but I think one thing that you have to take into account, the actual money being spent, is they're not able to just shut half a dozen or a dozen buses down when they reach that particular level. They can't shut their ADA accommodation vehicles down. Yes, maybe they need to be a little more diligent going forward when they do their budgets, but at the same time, if they are really spending that money because they have to keep the buses going, et cetera, then I think that the issue is there, the circumstances are there for there to be an overspend of the budget. They have to come back and ask for more rather than going tremendously excessive over and then, you know, cut, and then they come back and go, well, y'all didn't spend it all, so we're not going to give it. So I think there's a give and take there. They need to be a little more equitable or a little more diligent on the budget. But at the same time, I think we have to be a little less critical of the going over because they do have to maintain all the routes that they're or they risk not having people get where they're supposed to go when they do. And they do a lot of that. They do a lot of free stuff like school board kids that ride, and they don't come, they don't pay. Somebody's paying that. Somebody's got to pay for that. The number of students and the gas and taxes and stuff that allow and letting students and ride for free for going back and forth to school. So I think that a lot of that goes into that. And I do agree they should be a little more diligent, but I think we have to be careful how critical we are at the end run when they have to go back and ask for some more money.
Gotcha. Appreciate it. Thank you. You have something to say, sir? Okay. We're going to go on to the next one.
I just had another comment here. So since JTA is an independent agency, and we don't have a choice, we have to rubber stamp this, I imagine, we being the city, because it's already been spent. So if we back up a little bit, is there anyone that goes in and audits what JTA is spending and how they're spending it so that we can see, you know, maybe where their overspend is coming from? I know this bill states it was largely driven by increased fuel costs and an increase in the connection contract rate and timing of grant-related expenses, but surely there's got to be something else here.
Well, and in this case, for fuel costs, back during this time, that's when fuel really went up heavily. JTA still has a number of diesel buses, although they're going to CNG now, and some we have audit rights, being the council auditor's office, and we have done audits over there. So we have they are subject to being audited. They have audits. You know, they do their own annual audit on their financials as well by independent CPA firm. They also. with regard to the MV transportation, that's the provider that handles the CTC for JTA. They just entered into a new contract, and that was a little bit more expensive. They're also utilizing Connections Plus, which is a little bit more expensive for the user, but it seems to be a little bit more popular. The funds that come through the city, yes, the city council has to appropriate. Commissioner Tyson said, they're operating continuously. And so at the end of the year, when we see the final expenses as of 9:30, that's when we can say, okay, you know, you went over budget, and they have had a tendency to go over budget, and a lot of it is due to, like I said, projecting the net sales tax for the half cent that they get, the transportation part, because they have a projection, and we have a month later, we have a projection. And your 1 year, maybe it was that year, we projected almost $89 or $90 million, and it came in over $100 million.
That's fine. I would like to make a motion that we request the counselor's auditor office to audit JTA.
Yeah, can that be requested?
Can you expand on that?
Yeah.
Like, what do you, when you say audit, like, is it specific division, the whole thing? I just want to get a better idea in terms of what you're intending.
Yeah, so, I mean, so it goes back to how much they've gone over in just with this particular bill that's been put forth. I don't know when the last time council auditor audited JTA was, went in and did a full-blown audit. But given the fact that they've been going over budget for, you know, quite a while now, I think it's warranted to go in and actually see what, in more detail, what they're actually spending money on.
Through the chair, to Commissioner Pryor, we have done audits on, like, the payroll audit. We've done transportation on connection, paratransit audit. We, on various divisions and various parts of JTA, JTA as a whole, would be, that would be very, that'd be almost too large for us to audit the whole system. From our audit side, I don't know, and I'm not sure where JTA is on our risk plan.
That's something that they work on, so I'm not sure where that is.
Well, not meaning to sound ugly or anything, but just because something may seem too big doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it.
I didn't say we wouldn't do it. I just talking about the whole system.
Yeah. Is when's that been done? When's the last time we audited the entire JTA budget? Do you do that, or do you just do it by sections, or?
Well, we will pick, like, when we, like, for example, we'll do a payroll audit for all of JTA. We'll do a paratransit audit. Those are sections of JTAs.
Who gets the overall picture? Where's the overall picture for all of JTA?
It's never been done.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, they get it every year. They're audited by an independent auditing firm, and that audit goes to their board of directors, which governs JTA.
And that copy is also made available on their website. We get a copy of it, we look at it and review it as well, just to see if there's anything concerning that was found in the audit.
So, review to see
what the independent auditors found. But yes, Jeff is correct. They every year they have an audit done. All the independents have one done. We get their financials and review those. But as far as our office doing a whole audit, I don't know.
Once Jeff put on the schedule, invite them, we can ask more questions and then move on from there. But I understand your question, though, because there's been plenty of situations where things could be seem like it'd be more oversight.
Jeff, yeah. Craig Hayes would be the one.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Jeff. Let's go on. What about committee reports? Audit committee?
We don't have a meeting.
Okay. legislative tracking committee?
I was actually going to ask Jeff, because I was trying to find this and I couldn't. I know in reference to the gentleman that had the liquor store off Gulf Air next to Kip, how the mayor suggested that the city buy that property, turn to a community center.
Right.
Has that actually been introduced to city council as a bill or not yet?
I don't believe
no,
so.
It has not
happened because okay. The guys continue to move on until otherwise stated.
Okay. I gotcha. Okay. We have
no one has asked him yet to purchase it.
Okay. All right. I have nothing to report on.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thanks.
Y'all know I'm new, so
okay, go ahead.
I went through all of the legislative summaries that were provided, and I had questions about some of them, and I didn't know if is that supposed to happen in a subcommittee meeting, or can I do those here?
Okay. You got questions? You went to the, you didn't go to the meeting.
To be honest, we to give you insight, we do have a legislative committee technically with myself and Raymond Day on it. So probably what we need to do then is have a subcommittee meeting on that, I would think.
Okay. On so is it for these? Can I just run through them real quick?
Will you be able to answer those questions?
Yeah, we can take a crack at it.
I mean, it's not everyone. It's just I have a question on a couple of them. So, for example, Bill 2023-556 requests over $411,000 for a generator for the health department on West 6th Street in Springfield. My question is, that sounds like an awful lot of money for a generator and install. And do any of my fellow commissioners have any insight onto what that costs?
As a legislative committee member, I didn't question it just because at my job, we actually had some generators installed last year, and that was roughly the cost for it. Yeah, because when the average Joe usually thinks of a generator, I mean, we think of the little $2,000 Honda or something like a Generac. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're dealing, which I don't know the specifics on that, but I know at least with ours, when you're talking a generator that powers a hospital or powers a full-blown building, that it gets taxing really quick.
So, okay.
That's my two cents on it.
Okay. It just seemed a lot for me. So the next bill was 560, which wanted like an emergency transfer contract for ambulance services. They wanted to do it as an emergency, but the acquisition hasn't even taken place yet. So how could they pass this bill before the acquisition by the ambulance company hasn't even taken place yet?
They're doing it as an emergency in advance so that when the purchase takes place, the new company can operate instantly from when taking over from the old company. If we waited until the transaction took place, they would have to stop operating until the bill had passed council because they wouldn't have a valid certificate. So the certificate is being issued in advance so that the service doesn't stop operating.
So what happens if the transfer doesn't take place?
Then the certificate wouldn't be valid.
Okay.
The certificate, the new company would have to take over for the old one and operate under the new name. And if they're not operating under the new name, then they don't have a valid certificate.
Okay. Thank you. The next one is 561. It says that it is authorization to execute grant amendment, ordinance code waiver, and designation of oversight agency for the Waterways Commission. And it's 100. I'll just read this background information. It says, the council approved $140,000 to Mayport Waterfront, Inc. to develop an economic development revitalization and implementation plan for Mayport Village, which required the organization to conduct a minimum number of fundraising events and achieve certain fundraising goals. $42,000 has been dispersed thus far, and the organization is current with its reporting obligations. The agreement is currently scheduled to end on September 30th of this year, and they've requested an extension of that deadline by a year, which I don't necessarily have a problem with. But this is the issue. They have also requested that the funds be dispersed in scheduled installments on October 20th and January 31st, rather than on a reimbursement basis, which necessitates the waiver of the usual grant condition. So, you know, I had a couple of questions. Number, why are they behind, and why are we going to waive the requirement and disperse these funds when they were supposed to only be dispersed upon as a reimbursement?
That's basically a policy question for the council. They could stick to the terms of the contract and say, we won't give you any more until you raise the money you're supposed to raise, and that might bring the project to a halt while they try to raise more money. And I'm not sure if the money is for planning purposes. If they're developing a plan, they might have to, if they've hired somebody to develop the plan, that might mean saying, well, we stop paying for that company to do the work until they can raise more money.
Right, but what happens if they get this disbursement and they don't raise any more money?
Then they would have to come back to council and have a discussion about that.
So is this something that this commission takes up? Or
first off, the city council may not even approve it. It's just a bill before them requesting it. And if the city council has the same questions you may have with some of the council people, they may not approve it. And then it would be, you know, they'd have to go back and figure out what they're going to do as far as, I'd personally, if I was on city council, I'd have a lot of questions about why the same thing. And so it's not a done deal, especially when you're asking for it on an emergency basis.
So do we make recommendations as far as this is concerned or no?
We don't have a requirement to. We have the option to. It's up to you. Especially since it looks like from the legislative history, it was just introduced on the 22nd, so it probably won't be in committee until, 2 weeks from now, since council is next week?
Council is next week.
Right, so it won't be in front of committee for the first time until 2 weeks from now. So they haven't gotten a chance to actually ask some of the questions that they want to ask.
Okay. So we have to wait until it actually gets in committee before we do anything?
No, we don't.
Okay, I'm just, right. I know these are new, and that's why Jeff sends them to us so that we can get ahead of them. And so I'm just asking if this is a concern that I have, and I didn't know if this is something that this body takes up.
We can.
And I would like to bring these issues to the attention of whomever is going to be.
Bless you.
Do I have to make a motion to request that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make a motion that we draft a letter. Is it a letter or a resolution? I don't.
It'll be a letter. Yeah. Okay.
To city council, indicating our concerns about dispersing these funds on a scheduled installment versus on a reimbursement basis.
Do you want to loop in your concerns about
the
waiving of the requirement?
Yes, and waives the usual grant condition.
Okay. Jeff, can we do that? Get it done?
Someone has to second.
Second it?
I'll second it.
Been properly moved and second, and we'll get Jeff to type up a resolution or a letter.
I think a letter.
Letter be sufficient. Okay, thank you.
You want to send a letter to the city council expressing the true commission's concerns about the waiver of the prohibition on advanced disbursements.
It's not a waiver of the event. It's changing the way the money's dispersed. Rather than it be dispersed on a reimbursement basis, they're just going to disperse it on October 20th and January 31st.
Okay. Just for information, Jeff, whenever we have grant contracts like this, is that managed by grants and compliance, or is that something else?
It depends on who the money's coming from. Probably that would be a grants and compliance office thing. If it's something in downtown, then it's a DIA thing.
Okay. Thanks.
The next one that I had a question on.
Go vote on that.
Oh.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
This motion is passed. Thank you.
The next one I have a question on is 563, which is authorization of fund carryover of a CDBG fund. It's roughly $234,000 that wasn't spent. And so they're going to move that into a forgivable loan account. And so the question that I have was, what department within the city oversees forgivable loans like this? And does the CDBG grant allow this to even be done? Because a lot of times federal dollars that aren't spent have to be returned to the federal government.
My understanding of that one is that I'm not sure what program it was allocated for in the first place.
It was for home repairs.
Home repairs,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Move it from CDBG fund from administrative cost allocations to a forgivable loan account to provide additional funding for home repairs. Still underway, related to Hurricane Matthew.
If I remember that one correctly, the money that's being moved was CDBG money that was being used to pay the salary and
yep.
benefits of employees who are managing CDBG programs. They're being moved to another grant account, and so that money that's left over that's not going to their salaries and benefits is going to be put into a fund for another use and to make forgivable loans to people who are doing repairs to their houses.
Is that in that sense, it's excess cash that they want to spend in a way that actually will help people as opposed to just sitting.
Yeah. Rather than give that money back to the federal government, we're going to reallocate it to more home repairs because we don't need it because the salaries and benefits are now being paid off of another grant.
And CDBG allows that?
As long as it's being used for CDBG eligible purposes like home repairs, then yes, that should be allowable.
And do we track that separately within the budget and the accounting system so that we know for sure that this money is being used for those purposes?
Once it's put into a forgivable loan account and spent out of there, then yeah, I'm sure that's what it has to be used for.
Housing is your
department. Housing and Community Development Division okay. is the manager of CDBG.
Okay. All right. And I only have two more. Sorry. Appreciate your patience. The other one is 567, which is a request to implement a law to ban smoking and vaping in our parks. They say that the cost, it's undetermined for placement of signage in the parks. I imagine signs aren't that expensive, but my concern here is have they talked about or even considered enforcement? I mean, you can pass the law all you want, but unless you have someone that is going to enforce it, it's really worthless. And what would the cost be of that enforcement?
What? I think I'm the one who wrote that summary that said
you did.
Mm-hmm. That it's okay. That the cost is undetermined.
Or placement of signage is what it says. It doesn't even address enforcement at all.
That is true because I doubt that they plan to have people going through the parks looking for smokers to enforce against. Typically what would happen is someone would complain probably to a JSO officer, hey, there's a guy smoking over there. He shouldn't be smoking in the park. Go talk to him. And he would say, sir, that you're not permitted to smoke in a park. Please put that out.
Okay. One more, and I'm done. Is 590. And that is, it talks about eminent domain. When they're waiving... They are waiving the limit for purchase prices that are over $50,000. So, let me
I can explain that one.
Okay.
They talked about it. They talked about that in finance. In fact, in several committees yesterday. They are authorizing the use of eminent domain to allow the city to take, if they cannot get the owners to agree to sell them the property or to grant an easement that they need to widen Old Middleburg Road, then they are authorizing the OGC to use eminent domain up to $500,000 to acquire a property. Normally, anything over $50,000, they have to reach the agreement. They have to go through the court case. Okay.
Yeah, so
his hands
on the paperwork
6.
Okay.
So all right. We'll finish up and be out of here in just a minute.
Okay, I'm trying to keep these guys
here. Okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. The normal process is it's up to $50,000. They can do it administratively without going to council. Over $50,000, council has to do it. They're trying to get this thing done as an emergency because there's one substantial piece of property that is owned by a man who is terminally ill, and they want to close this thing before he dies. And they have not yet agreed on a price. It's going to be more than $50,000, so the council is saying anything up to $500,000 is okay. You can settle that without coming back to us. We authorize you to go up to $500,000. If it's over 500, then you do need to come back to us.
Here's the context. So this widening is part of the Better Jacksonville plan. It's something that a lot of West Side people, especially that live on that Old Middleburg corridor, have been waiting for almost a decade. And Councilman Johnson and a lot of the council members have been pushing Public Works to actually get it done.
Okay.
They're starting the process now, but this is a major piece that they need in order for it to get done. Mm-hmm. And because that gentleman has a terminal illness and he's going to pass away, unfortunately, soon, this is a way for them to kind of speed up the process so that way they don't get stuck in the six-week cycle of having to negotiate a deal, finally get a deal, and then go through the whole city council process in order for them to execute it, because it'll probably be more than the $50,000. And if he passes away, then that adds a whole wrinkle because it goes through probate, then it can take years before they can finally get it done.
Okay.
So this is a way to kind of cut the red tape.
Okay, we are very short for time. We could try if you guys want to. We're not, have you guys in the past looked over the bylaw revision? There's no old business, so I want to go to new business. Have you guys had a chance to look over the bylaws revision and ready to vote on that before we go?
I'm ready to vote.
You ready to vote? Okay, all right.
We've delayed it too much.
I know. That's why I'm getting it
discussion?
Done now. Okay. Oh. All right. Do we have discussion?
I just one thing I don't see necessary down on Article 6 officers. Mm-hmm. There's a part where you add a second vice chairman. I say we strike that entire, other than taking away the word man there, for taxation revenue, vice chair. For you.
Since we need to get out of here at 6 o'clock, and since Commissioner Day is the one who proposed having the two vice chairs, why don't we just wait until he's here and can talk about that?
Oh, that's fine. I'm good with that.
We're in no hurry to do the bylaws.
He's the one that insisted last month we absolutely do it this month.
Yeah.
Come hell or high water.
And
but I'm good
here.
With that.
Okay. And we just have to do better with our timing because I didn't know that they have to leave. Okay. So a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Yep.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you all.
Thank you.